For November the 17th, 2017, we talk about EA's microtransaction woes, Lisa, the painful RPG, and we ask you about your favorite in-game creations. Welcome to Level 220. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. That little hesitation there was because Ben is not here. He's out doing stuff for his birthday.
Yeah, what are the rules even?
Ben. I don't even know if he listens to this when he's not on it, but whatever. Anyway, happy birthday, Ben, and thanks.
Yeah, we all wish him a happy birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I believe he's 50 years young.
And doesn't look a day over. Yeah. No, that's fun. So I looking at the stats, and I've never actually run these to figure out because it's too much work to go back and fill in the first 100 or so episodes. Ben is the one who's almost always here. So whenever he's gone, we immediately enter into, oh, this is the rarest combination. So
yeah.
So this is pretty close. This is pretty close there.
Yeah.
This is the Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker unlockable of level episodes.
Yep.
Wow.
cutting to the brief.
Yeah. Gotta move this along here.
Yeah, I suppose. minor programming note: we're not going to be here next week because of Thanksgiving. I'm not going to be at my house.
I just would like to point out that I recorded the podcast from several thousand miles away from my house several times.
True, but I think the key point was I was here with all the recording stuff.
So the cheerful news for anybody who is a Jala fan, I'm going to be on Dark Insight next week. So at the end of the week, instead of the level, you will have a Dark Insight, including yours truly.
Go do that.
So yeah, that'll be a thing.
Yeah,
so being the witch at the Ren Fair, that was just warm up, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Wait a minute, witch at the Ren Fair. Oh yeah, I recognize this.
Yeah, so why don't we just segue over into Jala's weekend?
Yeah.
Jala went and ran 20 miles on Saturday and then turned around and went to Renaissance Festival on Sunday, and it was super fun. And my friend decided that she didn't want to dress up, but I can't go to, like, I've been going to RenFest and dressing up every single time for the last, I don't know, 7 years, and so I can't go to RenFest without at least kind of dressing up. So I just threw a bunch of random stuff from my closet together and then ended up being a very festive and colorful witch who can run marathon distances in Storm Castle. So, I mean, get you one that can do everything. Why not?
That's cool. Did you get a good response?
Oh, yeah. Like, people freaking love my hat. Like, something fierce, for
sure. Very floppy hat.
It is a floppy hat with a little curly, multicolored tail on the back of it. You see how, see it in that second picture there?
Yeah.
It looks like you cut off a chameleon's tail. And,
right? It's really cool. And yeah, for people who do not know, you can just follow me on various social media at Jalachan, and you will see it there because that's like my current profile picture, I think, on social media.
In places?
In places, all the places.
Okay,
like any
cool
place that I am Jalachan.
Yeah.
So you can find.
Well, I will also put a link to this post in the show notes if people want to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, you can see my fancy, very colorful self. With my little purple bustle and, I don't know, everything else. So
yeah, so it sounds like you had a good time.
Oh, yeah, I had fun. I always have fun. It was great.
I've never been to a Ren Fair.
Well, okay, so I have been to the Renaissance Festival every year for many years in a row. I don't, like, I'm not one of those crazy people who goes out and camps and is there every single weekend or anything. But, like, I do make an appearance. And depending upon who I'm around at the time, or if certain groups of friends want to go with me, then I might end up going multiple times in the same year just because different people want to go. But Like, at this point, I know the entire fairground very well, where all the shops are, and what sells what. You know, if you need to know where to find something at the Texas Renaissance Festival, I can probably tell you.
draw a map from memory.
I some of the people who are vendors there recognize me because I'm there all the time. Like, every year I'm there. So, yeah. And then, too, like, there's only a couple of shows that I will go and see that I will make it a point to go see. But the big one that I always go to is Iris and Rose Wild and Thorny. They are a singing pair of sisters who have lots of fun body songs, and throughout the day they get progressively drunker, so the last show of the day is fucking hilarious. And the thing is, they never do the same show twice, and they've got a lot of material, so I've never seen, in all the time that I've watched them, I've never seen them do the same exact show ever. Like, it's always a bunch of jokes and limericks and songs and everything else, and then they throw to the audience, and then audience members will come up, and the super fans will actually like prepare and have like their own written down stuff that they've come up with during the year to come to the Iris and Rose show and like say the thing. So it's actually a lot of fun. And so they go to Renaissance festivals all around the US. So if there is a Ren Faire near you, they are probably there.
Nice.
So, but they sell recorded music, but it is definitely not nearly as fun as what it is in person.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's a lot bawdier and it's a lot funnier.
I imagine that let's say 76% of the appeal of that music is venue. Not to take away from their talent, but like I could see that definitely being a key factor.
Oh, sure. It's N1, but the Cincinnati Ren Faire is pretty good. Mm-hmm. The one time I went, I don't have anything to compare it to, and I may have showed up slightly inebriated and with my son in a bear outfit and spent the entire time yelling that there was a ferocious bear after me.
Uh-huh.
So I would say it was a pretty good experience.
Yeah, from what you remember of it.
Yeah, and see, like, it's just a lot of fun because a lot of people dress up. It's a lot of fun people watching. And what's hilarious is that because, you know, I've been, like, I had to take a hiatus when I had all the medical stuff this summer, and I'm still on hiatus because my life has not stopped blowing up since. Like, right now, my mom got home from being in the hospital for a month, so, like, she's in a wheelchair, and I'm having to do a lot of extra stuff, so, like, I just don't have time right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I was doing belly dance regularly for so long that I actually know all the belly dancers who are up there, and I know a lot of the people who are actors, like, they're friends of mine.
You're plugged into the scene.
Well, I mean, like, I didn't even meet them at the Renaissance Festival. I just happened to know them from somewhere else, and then, hey, they work there. Yeah. Okay. You know,
yeah,
it's funny.
The closest thing that I had around where I grew up, there's a famous for Ohio farm called Malabar Farm, over from where I live, and they have Frontier Days is what they call it. So picture like a Ren Faire, but for like the Ohio frontier. You know, it's exactly what it sounds like. You know, it's all about farming and agriculture, and they get some of the local native population to come and set up and do demonstrations of their arts. It's kind of cool. Like, you want to go with a kid because you can appreciate it through their eyes, but like, it's a beautiful piece of land and get to walk around. And the thing that has always confused me, this was several years ago, but who knows if this is true, for a couple of years in a row, they had a cart or like a trailer almost, or a tent, something, some kind of conveyance that, that sold like sugary drinks. Like, you know, sarsaparilla and root beer, like, you got the sense that it was, like, you know, small batch kind of things, but it was medieval themed, you know, like the entire, I've got the bottle, like, I kept it because it was real nice. It's like a swing top, you know, blue glass bottle, but it's like Odin's dragon or something like that. And I was like, oh, you never get sarsaparilla anywhere. So I got some sarsaparilla and fought off the bees that were coming after me. But like, for here in this 20 foot by 30 foot space in the middle of the frontier, we just have, hark yon sire, perchance to fetch some mead. Like, like, I was going to go over here and learn how they remove the seats from the cotton, but okay. they've got a shed over there where they're drying tobacco. That seems pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like at the Renaissance Festival. People just kind of do whatever. Like, right. They had a bunch of outfits that were like, you know, corsets and whatever for women that had like, you know, like Wonder Woman color schemes and things. And so, yeah. Like, basically remade it as like kind of quasi Renaissance-ish looking clothes, but like superhero themed.
Cool. Yeah.
And, you know, there are also all the steampunk people who wander around, yes. And every once in a while, because there's also, you know, like the Sea Devil Tavern and stuff like that. There's a pirate sector.
Oh, God.
You've also got the people who will wander around dressed up as characters from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, you know, that kind of a thing. So, I mean, like, you just get whatever at Renaissance Festival. It's just an excuse for people to get drunk and dress up and whatever.
And eat turkey legs.
Yeah, that too. I mean, if you're that kind of person that eats turkey legs, and yeah. That whole discussion where you and Gary were talking about chewing on cartilage and shit, which is like the nastiest thing I have ever heard in my life, Cole. That disgusted
me. Oh, cartilage is good for you.
Don't even talk to me.
Yeah,
no, that's that was nasty. That's how you get your gristle in your diet.
Yeah. How else are you going to maximize? I hate chewing on cartilage. No, that's hilarious, Jolly, because you're talking. That was like a premium episode of Abject Suffering. That's a show where we talk about some really challenging concepts. But it's just hilarious that out of the hundreds and hundreds of those we've done, that is the one that like turned your stomach.
Well, dude, I was not the only one. I had other listeners that also had the premium episode, and they were like, oh my God, no, seriously, I even eat meat and that was too much for me. And so like, yeah, you guys did a thing with that one.
Yep, proud of that.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah. No, my weekend wasn't nearly as eventful as yours, except Allison, friend of the network, Allison, dropped something really disturbing on my, basically right on my lap.
I saw this, yeah.
Yeah. My doppelganger.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you all saw this? I put it in.
His eye color
isn't
the same, though.
By which you mean we saw you.
Well, by which, yeah, so Jala's correct. The eye color is not the same. Also, I'm not in a wheelchair. It appears this character is. I guess there's a show on Showtime called Shameless, and Jala sent me, like, just added me with this picture, and like, oh, it's me. That's funny. What's the original image? I don't recognize what that show's from. Like, no, really. Like, what is your doctor to do that? No, this is just a person.
No, don't blame me. That was Allison, not Jala.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. There we go. Sorry. I've included this. I've linked the post here. Yeah, it's too much is what it is. So it's an actor whose name is Zach Perlman, no relation to Ron Perlman as far as I can tell. If you look him up, like other times, like he does not look anything like me really, but mm-hmm. If there's something about this lighting and there's something about his expression that is just It is eerie what it is.
What made me laugh is that in the comments, somebody was like, you know, I think that this is how your face would look exactly if someone just came up and handed you a baby.
Yeah, yeah. That was Jenny Palanda.
Bewildered and slightly indignant.
Like, what do you expect me to do with this? Yeah, so that is the cosmic... let's say disparity that I have been trying to reconcile for the past 72 hours.
That's funny.
Yeah. Anybody else have any stories from the past week or the weekend?
Mm-mm. I just think there's only one thing left, Cole, which is you need to kill him and take his place.
Nah, it's fine. It's fine. As long as we never meet, at that point, it will force us to a conflict.
I'd watch that fight.
Yeah. Yeah. We must enact the right of caratur.
Apparently, he starred in a movie called Hot Bot, whose tagline was "Turn her on."
Oh no!
He's like a character actor. Like whenever it calls for like a big red haired guy, and it's like you look at him in pretty much any light, and he has exactly the kind of red hair that I don't. Which is like the really coppery, just like oh yeah, like that is totally just. You know, you're really coppery and red and brassy. Like, no, I don't have that. And that's what people, that's what I think people say when they say it. I mean, when they say that I have red hair, but I don't have that.
Well, also, man, his beard is like really, really red, way more red than yours is.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So, But yeah, it's just that one picture because of the light and the shape of the hair and stuff. I don't know.
The shape of his head.
You can just peruse his headshots to get all kind of styling ideas.
No, I'm really comfortable with what I have. So with that, I think it's probably time for us to hop in and do the regular kind of show, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Dennis, you've got the hot topic here.
I do. I take the layup this week.
It was right.
The thought I had when I posted this to our.
Yeah. So what's the conversation I'm going to have to hear all about for the next 6 or so months?
Yeah. They fixed it apparently. So maybe it'll all go away, right?
This problem is still, it's going to be sitting here because there are fundamental. We should outline what it actually is.
Yeah,
let's talk about this. What's the story?
So EA has microtransactions in Battlefront 2 because every game has microtransactions now. And a Redditor did some math based on what they were getting from every online match in terms of these credits, which buy you shards, which buy you gold, which buy you platinum, which buy you characters.
It's the usual free-to-play multi-currency obfuscation of value that seeks to short-circuit the way we interpret what things are worth. Yeah.
And seriously, the number of hoops I just jumped through is not that exaggerative.
There are three forms of currency in this game, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, so they, did some math to figure out how long in in-game time, based on the average of what they were earning, it would take. And they estimated it would take over 40 hours to earn Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader, which are kind of the banner heroes for this game. Which is just insane. So this went up on Reddit and people exploded about it. And then a poor community manager for Battlefront 2 responded, trying to give some sort of excuse about, well, we want it to feel like an accomplishment. And that became the most downvoted post in history. Blech. In a matter of 24 hours. Yeah. Now that's a conversation for another time, but suffice to say people were unhappy. So as of this recording, EA has come back and said, oh, we realized that was a bad idea. Let's cut prices on Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader by 75%. So from 60,000 credits or whatever it is down to 15. And then they took other heroes from 20,000 to 10,000 or 5,000. So this seems now, quote unquote, much more reasonable. It's still 10 hours of in-game time to unlock
is
one.
Is that 10 hours for one of them or for both of them?
10 hours for one of them. So
okay, so it's 20 still hours completely unreasonable.
Well, but yeah, I mean, this is a multiplayer shooter kind of game, and presumably you're going to be playing hundreds of hours of this, and if you're really into it, not to jump right to their defense.
The first game where you generally played, 1 hour of it.
I mean, it's not unreasonable to expect somebody to play 10 hours of a multiplayer game with a progression system like this.
That is fair. And yeah. It would be interesting to compare this to, like, say, the time it took to unlock all weapons in Call of Duty or what have you.
Although I would say the difference is potentially this is 10 hours where every resource you earn is going towards this. Whereas, getting something Call of Duty might be 10 hours where you're getting something else along the way every hour or whatever.
That's a great point.
I think the point that I'm making is that the hours that you spend playing a game, like that figure, like what is considered to be the value for purchase, changes when you get into something that is multiplayer based like this, as
sure.
opposed
oh, yeah,
to like
from, it's
at, a camp, at a campaign based thing.
Yep. True. Sure. Although I still think 10 hours is way, way too long for that being, solely devoted to unlocking one character.
Yeah. Well, it also gets around to like playing as these characters is a massive feature of this game that they have really advertised around. Like this is the one where you get to play as the character that you know about.
Exactly. Yeah. It is true that there are other ways to earn credits than just straight up playing the game or playing the multiplayer mode that was used for the calculation. But still, this is a very clumsy attempt that doesn't seem well thought out. It's amazing that they slashed so deeply so fast. Like if they didn't know that this was completely ludicrous, how could they have been that ready to cut so deeply? Like 75% is huge. It just that makes it feel almost more greedy. And it's like, yeah, we can, you know, over the course of 2 days decide to walk this back 75%.
What should they have done?
God, I don't know. Not done it in the first place.
Well, I mean, obviously.
Taken out microtransactions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and that does get to a fair point of, you know, it's never going to be enough for the internet until every single person who worked on this game is burnt at the stake.
Well, I mean, I think do the right thing is not exactly a high bar.
but what's the right thing?
Don't have microtransactions. If you paid $60 for a game, give me the fucking game.
Okay, yeah. No, that gets into a bigger thing. I think that all of them should be rendered for their carbon. That way, you know, the people who deserve the jobs should be able to take their place.
At least the executives.
Yeah, so. I don't actually think that. But like, this is a massive thing. I mean, I was listening to the besties, and like three of the four games they brought up, maybe more of them, were these big kind of games that where they were trying to build all of this kind of like long tail monetization into, either out of loot boxes or, you know, the notion of pay this money to completely obviate needing to do these quests to build this item or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just sure. any number of monetary shortcuts that they put in.
The interesting thing is, like, so Warframe has not the exact same thing, but they have a crafting system where technically you can get any item in the game without paying for it. However, it's going to take you hours and hours and hours. And so I would not be surprised at all if Warframe had an item or a set or a rig or whatever that took 40 hours of in-game time to actually earn. David, you would be better positioned to comment on.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's exactly true, because although that is true, some for like the Prime tier, which is basically their like, you know, end game grind type thing. Generally speaking, their approach is, while it takes a very long time to get every item, you generally have enough resources at any given time to get any single item you want.
Yeah.
I will say the one thing they do have that's kind of, you know, is a thing like that, is that once you craft the items, it can take a very long time. Most notably, like, a new Warframe itself takes like 3 days of real time.
Holy shit.
Although I feel like that's a little bit more understandable when there's not a $60 upfront price.
Yeah, sure. Mm. And I think it's kind of, this is a lightning rod for frustrations that have been brewing over months now, as more and more games have gone microtransaction crazy.
This way. Look, I mean, think a few weeks back when we did the story about Amy Hennig being taken off of the Star Wars game and Visceral
right,
Games
yeah.
closing. They, you know, same property, same publisher, who looked at what they were making, which was a, you know, a single player story focused game, and saying, we can't actually make money off of the back of this.
Well, I mean, we can't make the money we want.
Yeah, we can't make the ROI. We can't, you know, we can't, you know, multiply our input on this by a certain amount. So we have to do this. I understand that that distinction is built into what I said. What you end up looking at is, like, we need to start charging what games are worth if we want to, you know, or be okay paying what games are worth if want those big kind of things. Like, $60 is not enough, apparently, for them to make the kind of things that we want.
But I feel like the problem is that cuts both ways, because, you know, a lot of games that charge for $60 aren't worth $60. And, you know, I think the real, a lot of the issue you have is, you know, it's an averaging thing. You know, if I could go and buy a game for $60 and, you know, be confident that it would be worth it, or more than $60, whatever, and be confident that would be worth it, that would be one thing, but you really can't. I mean, there's virtually no safe bets left out there anymore.
I mean, there never were.
For a long time, like, you could be pretty sure if you bought, for example, a Valve game, that sooner or later they would make things right.
I mean, you're definitely selecting for just the winners that you remember getting. I think that it's kind of always been the case. And what you're saying is like, oh, I will pay money for a game from this studio. I guess like it has to be either or. Like, it has to be, I'm not going to play games anymore because this market is too toxic, or I'm going to pay more money for these. You know, I'm going to pay for them to make the kind of games that I want and send that message along.
It can't just be like,
hey, give me something infinitely valuable and infinitely good, and I'll pay you infinitely less.
I guess what I'm saying is, I feel like most of the time when I buy a game for full price, I end up feeling ripped off, not feeling like I got a deal.
Yeah.
And that's the core problem. You know, if I had bought him Warframe for $60, I would have been thrilled.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if I bought basically any EA game for $60, I would feel ripped off.
EA or Activision or any kind of like AAA non-Nintendo title that has to dip into these particular things. And like, we talk about microtransactions as if they're a new thing. Like, we're 10 years out from when the horse armor was added. Like, this has been a brewing for a decade. And you know, like, I think that this is a whole lot of carpetbaggers from mobile coming over and saying like, hey, we make infinite money with basically nothing by tricking people into not understanding what things are worth. And no company and no publisher can avoid that because of their duty to their shareholders, et cetera, et cetera.
Because, of course, companies have a duty to their shareholders.
I mean, it's written into the law. I mean, that's the...
No, not really.
But that is what they have. You know, that's the way the incentives are kind of set up. I think that, you know, ultimately what it comes down to is like, if you don't want to play it, like, buy indies. But also, indies should probably start charging more money for them too, because there's another race to the bottom over there. It sounds like you don't like any video games that are made, David.
it's fairly uncommon.
Last week I was super salty and David took my place this time. I was going to be all sugar this time, and man.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like it's more just people not understanding capitalism. You know, it's...
I don't understand...
Basically,
by people, do you mean the publishers or you mean the buyers?
The publishers came out with downloadable content and microtransactions that were shit and people didn't buy them. And instead of saying, hey, maybe we should provide a product that people want, they said, maybe we should force people to buy our shit.
How are they forcing you to buy their stuff?
By, you know, saying that you can't progress, you know, not making it possible to progress in the game without doing so.
Well, I mean, you can do it. It just takes 10 hours, which you're probably going to play this game anyway.
Maybe you were. I don't know.
I'm not interested in playing this game. And I think this is pretty garbage. I mean, I would fire back and say they wouldn't be doing this if it didn't make money. You know, the consequences be damned for their PR.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the key distinction there is making money versus making enough money, right? Yeah.
Well,
so,
and
it's an expectation.
I think making money is legitimate if you're doing it by adding value. Mm-hmm. It's not legitimate if you're doing it by, you know, trying to manipulate people.
Yeah. No, I'm not taking the tack that it's good for them to manipulate this stuff. I just think that it's like, it's just shameful that this is the hack that we have arrived at, or that the industry has arrived at, to justify the budgets on these games, or to, you know, kind of justify any number of decisions all the way up and down the line to make something that is worse.
I see, but I think it can be done well. Like, look at Overwatch. Mm-hmm. I think that's an example of microtransactions being baked into a game that you pay. I think it was full price for it. It was either $40 or $60.
It was $40.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And doing it in a way that makes total sense, that I know people that are perfectly happy to drop money on it. I know people who mm-hmm. don't feel like paying extra on top, and they just don't and aren't bothered by it.
Yeah.
I think it gets so dicey when you get into mechanical stuff rather than cosmetic stuff, but that's
yeah.
probably another conversation.
I don't think it's about cosmetic versus mechanical. I think it's about abusive or not abusive. Because, like, most of it in Warframe is mechanical. It's just not abusive.
What makes what Warframe does not abusive compared to some of the stuff that we're talking about?
I would say the fact that, you know, you can advance without having to pay for stuff.
Yeah, you just put a bunch of time into it. Kind of like playing 10 hours to get Luke Skywalker.
I'm saying there's not an equivalent to that in Warframe.
I mean, you don't get currency off of the back of playing the game and completing quests that you put into acquiring stuff that otherwise you would spend money on.
What I'm saying is, like, there's not something where it's like, I have to grind for hours and hours to get anything.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I sunk a good amount of time into it and felt like I barely scratched the surface of the stuff that I had very few weapons, just a couple rigs, and some of those were gifted to me. So,
I had the point where, like, I have literally like 20 or 30 weapons built that I haven't even taken out of the crafting station because I have more weapons that I can possibly use.
How many hours have you put into Warframe?
I've put in a lot of hours.
And now the argument falls apart.
No, I'm just. I don't think we're saying this.
The other issue is, like I said, I didn't pay $60 for Warframe. Like, I would say there are distinct features that, if it was going to not be a free to play game, would need to be gotten rid of, like the crafting times.
Mm-hmm.
But I think within it being a free to play game, that's reasonable, but there's nothing where it's a, you know, just pay money or you basically can't advance.
I mean, is your problem that they're doing it both ways? You're paying $60 for this thing out the gate, and also it has a gigantic hole that you throw money in to not play the game that you paid $60 to play?
Yeah, I think it's that, and I think it's, you know, a matter of degree. You know, obviously...
At this point, we should also say none of us have played this game, so it's we can't actually know.
we can know it has a symbol that says EA.
I mean, that's reductive, and you sound like somebody on Reddit right now. Yeah, I mean, we can't just like jump out and say that isn't a basis for the argument or for like knowing the way that this articulates.
It isn't a valid argument. It doesn't mean it's not one I'm going to make.
Oh, true. Well, I just want you to I want you to understand what you sound like.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. No, it's pretty hostile. I'm curious if this actually gets in the way of the single player, which I understand the single player, and this is pretty fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. Any final thoughts on this?
It's not a game that was on my roster. Any chance that it had of being added to my roster of like stuff I want to play kind of evaporated with the snafu, but
there's so much.
I haven't spent any money that I was going to spend on them, so no harm to me and no harm to them, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's so much good stuff to play, like anything to disqualify it.
Help me narrow down, please. Yeah. Just give me an excuse.
Yeah. Does Destiny have any of this any kind of a cash economy built into it?
They do. You can buy, but it's all cosmetic stuff.
Okay.
Well, I guess I shouldn't technically say that, because some of the, so you can get emotes, you can get shaders, you can get skins for your ship and for your Sparrow, your speeder bike.
Shaders to make the screen black and white, or
shaders to make your armor and weapons different colors. So,
oh, like dye, like armor dye.
Yeah, exactly. Armor dye. Exactly.
Okay. That's very confusing.
It is.
Welcome to Destiny.
The ships, well, not the speeders, can have special effects attached to them that technically, I guess, kind of have a gameplay implication. Mm-hmm. I had a speeder that instantly summoned instead of, you know, holding down the button for like 2 seconds to summon.
Right.
Which meant, you know, I got to where I was going that much faster.
It's worth saying these are pretty exclusively like non-combat things.
Non-combat, and certainly nothing that touches PvP.
Right.
So I could get in depth on all the differences, but it does cosmetics, and I haven't found it intrusive. I'm not the type of person who is annoyed with microtransactions in games as long as it doesn't have mechanical impact.
Right. Or competitive impact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well.
Well, technically, the Ministry of Funny Walks emote had mechanical impact for a brief period of time, but
wait a minute! Did they bite West of Loathing Stees?
Oh, or did West of Loathing talk bite their about Stees? That?
We did. Yeah, it's it lets you clip through walls and.
Oh shit! Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay. Yes, they did, although they weren't nearly as entertaining as the like little worm crawl you can do in West of Loathing.
Apparently the funny walk one impacts speedruns in that game.
Oh,
Yeah, crazy walking or whatever it is.
How about that?
It's pretty minor. It's more minor than you would think. Let's move from dumb things to spend money on to kind of cool things to spend money on. last year, Humble, they released this kind of gigantic package of games where all the proceeds go to charity. And surprise, they have done something similar this time as well. Done another one of these. And it's been a while since we've just made a news item out of like, hey, go do this on Humble, because like they're different than they than they were when we started the show. But this is actually really cool, and it has a lot of stuff that we've talked about on the show in here kind of built in. It's pay what you want. I think the suggested one is $30 for 27 games. Mm-hmm. But like they've got just looking at the page of stuff that we have talked about a lot in the past. They have like Starbound, Darkest Dungeon, Stardew Valley, Her Story, Pony Island is in here, The Park, Machinarium, Psychonauts, Good.
Oh, I was just going to throw out Van Helsing, although not exact. He's definitely on like my guilty pleasure list.
What kind of, is that like a character action game or is that a first person thing?
It's basically a Diablo clone.
Okay.
But it's, you know, a little, it's big flaw is it's generic Diablo clone. Its big advantage is it does a really fun, like mashup of kind of a weird science and like you know vampire hunter type thing. That's a lot of fun.
Nice. Yeah. But all this is pretty cool, and they've even got like some pretty good horror stuff in here. Actually, they've got Kolots, they've got The Park, they've got Dread Out. All of these are some kind of more obscure horror things that were released in the past couple years or so. I don't know. I think this is really cool. And like the money is split between like American Red Cross and Doctors Without Borders, basically to lend support to people ravaged by the earth coming apart at the seams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sad, but true.
I don't mean to make light of it, but it's been a particularly tough year for natural disasters. So this is a good cause to, you know, to pay money and get games for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody see anything in here that they want to give a big up to?
Let's see here.
If you like The Secret World, The Park is the same universe.
The same, made with the same assets too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea what it is, but Primal Carnage Extinction looks amazing.
Huh.
That's like humans versus dinos. I have it. It's like a team-based shooter thing.
Nothing
at least
that's
what I'm thinking
of.
I might
amazing.
Be thinking of the different thing, but I think that's what that one is.
That sounds accurate compared to the video that I'm looking at right now.
Okay.
It looks very trashy.
The obvious one is Machinarium, which we did a special episode for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you do anything with Lakeview Cabin?
No, I've never heard of this until I saw it on here.
Yeah, that looks kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's like a pixel art, like hyper gory slasher kind of stuff. Yeah, I'm real curious about it. I'm going to pick this up. Even though I own like three-thirds of the stuff. Three-thirds, that's right, 100%.
Three-thirds of it.
Yep, three-thirds.
Well, that's okay. We have like that giveaway Slack list.
Oh, yeah. Do you get the keys if you buy something you already own?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. That makes this
so
a much better deal for me.
There's like a running list on Slack. There's a channel where we give stuff. Like people who have extra codes and stuff will dump them in there so that way other people in the community can get them and play them.
Yeah.
So
if you ever get really bored and you don't have a game, if you're in the Slack, you can go there and get a game.
Yeah, go shopping.
So. Mm-hmm.
So I completely forget why, but for some reason I liked the team behind Fearless Fantasy.
Hmm. I don't know.
I do not at all recall why. I just remember that that is a fact.
Yeah. that is a fact about me and a thing I like. Yeah. I don't know. I thought I'd bring this up. It's pretty cool.
Cool. Good stuff.
What's that?
Acceptable.
Acceptable. I'm like, yeah, oh man, there's the doppelganger again.
Going, well, I don't know. I just wanted to say the thing. It's like, no, it's fine. It's all right. You chose this as your news item.
Don't attack
it is news.
Me. Yeah.
It's good.
Let's see here. Jala, tell me what's happening in the story.
Yeah, so games have been used for education for a long time, but I actually have a story today about their use as educational intervention. The Nun in Three project is using video games to teach Barbadian primary and secondary school children to develop certain attitudes in responses to domestic violence, because that is a big problem in Barbados, apparently. It focuses on teaching conflict resolution, developing empathy and emotional intelligence by following the story of a 10-year-old boy named Jesse, who is experiencing domestic violence at home. And it's currently on desktop and laptop, but they're trying to expand over and work with a developer to get it on smartphones as well. It made enough waves that the government of the UK has funded the program and with over $4 million, that is being given to help expand the project to China, Pakistan, Jamaica, and Uganda. And I don't know, but I'm guessing those are places chosen specifically because of their, you know, domestic violence problems.
Right.
The gist is that by educating the young people to respond correctly to these situations and to have the right attitudes about them, they can help limit the manifestation of domestic violence in the future. So, you know, intervention by way of the long gone, you know, the long con, you know?
Yeah.
We could con them into being better people.
Well, you know what I'm saying. Though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, the last lecture would have called that the head fake.
There you go. So,
so
that's kind of cool. I had talked about something like that. Oh, I don't know. It's probably 2 years ago now that I mentioned it. There was that college that had that whole game on their website that was about like consent and stuff like that. And that was a thing that they were using in colleges, in college classrooms, about consent, you know, in situations that college kids would have, you know, dealt with. So, yeah, it's something kind of like that. But this is actually like something that's being implemented with school kids, like, you know, really young kids, to, you know, basically see if they can change their attitudes while they're in their formative years. You know, not that kids in college aren't, you know, in formative years, but less so.
Right.
You know,
I mean, still any kind of intervention. Yeah.
So I was just kind of scrolling through. There's something that caught my eye that's kind of cool is apparently the setting and all the voice actors and stuff like that are all from the Caribbean. So that's kind of neat to just, if nothing else, you know, have a kind of a different, I don't know, not have your main character be, you know, generic Nolan North guy.
Right, right. It's not James Whiteson, you know, going around. And, yeah. And the last paragraph here, they're doing they did additional research to kind of get messages out for other issues or other kind of populations, specifically women who experience domestic violence during pregnancy, women with disabilities, women living with HIV, and women in same-sex relationships. So this is a pretty it looks like the domestic violence part of it is only one small thing. Like, and this is, I was about to say this is a novel approach to public health education, but like, this doesn't seem that different to me than like Sesame Street in South Africa adding their first HIV positive character.
Yeah.
To get that there, except this is interactive and comes with a different set of advantages, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it kind of reminds me of a while back we had a multiplayer question that was about, you know, what kinds of things you learn from or, you know, whatever. How did games help you through something, or what did you learn from a game or whatever, something like that. And it kind of was the same sort of thing where, like, really, video games influence your outlook on things more than you realize they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially like as you are a young person and as you grow up. And so, you know, like, it makes a lot of sense, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And if it's done right, and if it's done in a way that, you know, really does engage the kids to where it's not like, oh, I got to do this stupid thing for an hour, you know, like, you know, then yeah, this would be definitely something that, you know, could really help in the future. And there may be more of this kind of thing coming up, you know.
Games taught me to type. They can teach other more important stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Very cool. And this is kind of great because I never have any reason to think about Barbados or the Caribbean or the issues that happen down there. So that's nice to know that they're solving problems in their own way. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Cool. David, you got a story?
Sure. So this one isn't exactly video games, but I just kind of thought it was cool. This came up on Hacker News a while back, and it's a guy who's a guy who does a blog basically on the intersection of like actual, like, you know, the actual law, you know, legal system, stuff like that, and comic books, the comic book universes.
Yeah, it's a blog called lawandthemultiverse.com.
Right. And this one was discussing, was an article entitled Outlawry, Supervillains in Modern Law. And so it's basically discussing the you know, the original meaning of the term outlaw was basically back in medieval Europe. You know, there was no actual police force, and there are things where, like, you know, in a lot of places, either like the court for a given crime, like for all of England, only met in London, or B, like a town's like, you know, legal system only met like two or three times a year. And so basically, even if someone was convicted of a crime, there is virtually no way to actually enforce any sentencing.
Okay.
And so what they did is, you know, someone who committed a serious crime would simply be declared an outlaw.
Excommunicated, right?
Well, basically, it means that the law no longer applies to them. So anyone can, in effect, kill them on site with no legal repercussions.
Yeah. So outlaw, like outside of the protection of the law.
Right. Exactly. And you know, and it's kind of interesting because, you know, it goes through kind of some of the history of this and how this evolved. And, you know, for example, the fact that, like, this was never something that was imported to America, but this is, in fact, more or less de facto how the Old West basically worked.
Mm-hmm.
Then the argument makes that, you know, relates to superheroes is basically arguing that in a, you know, superhero universe, this sort of system would be a very plausible way of reconciling the issue of, like, you know, kind of the elephant in the room of like every time a superhero movie wants to do like, oh, we're going to make it gritty and realistic, is, well, your characters are basically vigilantes, so they would, you know, be arrested immediately, or just everyone they bring in would immediately be, have their case thrown out. And basically makes the argument that, you know, if they're superheroes, you know, in a world where supervillains exist, that, that, you know, there's no possible chance that the, that the normal law enforcement system could handle them. It would be very conceivable to set up a system where you basically declared, certain supervillains to be outlaws, and then had a class of superheroes that went around and took care of them.
So vigilantes going after the vigilantes themselves.
Or or vigilantes going after the people who are no longer under protection of the law. So technically, they're not vigilantes anymore.
Right. Huh.
So
if a vigilante breaks the law, but there's no law to break, is it still a vigilante?
Yeah. Who laws the outlaws?
Exactly.
Right.
Who vigils the lantes?
Yeah. I'd like to see this worked into like an open world game. Like, it's really frustrating in Oblivion or Skyrim, where you accidentally pick up the wrong thing and then somebody chases you halfway across the map. Like if one of the punishments, like, or depending on the town, was that if you were a criminal, then all of a sudden, like, maybe guards don't come to your help and more people put a mark on you kill you and take your stuff.
That's also, like, that's one of my big problems with a lot of this, you know, survival games like DayZ, is that, you know, ultimately, if you look at things, like, the reason, you know, they're not actually simulating anything, because, you know, we know how society, works when there's no laws, because that's how most of society has been. And it's not anarchy.
Right.
You know,
right.
Ultimately, if people know you're someone that's a bad person, sooner or later, and usually sooner, that's going to catch up with you.
Right. And not and not as a function of the state.
Man, right. Exactly.
And I remember when I was young, we would use on our popcorn, instead of regular salt, we would use Outlaw Reese's and salt. Bone. who made a disgusted sound?
Me? Okay. Who else? Come on.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, you put up this question, so what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Michael P., thank you, asked, what's the craziest item you've crafted or structure that you've built in a game?
Yeah, and this is a good one. A lot of people came out, and I'm going to say we're likely not going to get through all these, so I apologize in advance. But I'm going to get us started here with Nick, who says, I created a four-wheeled vehicle in Gary's Mod once that glitched out the game to such a degree that it was legitimately frightening. Yeah, I got into some of that Carboys action.
I need details. What did it look like?
Yeah, I want to understand kind of abstract horrors you unleashed.
Yeah, exactly. The problem is it didn't exist fully in Euclidean space and, you know, summoned screaming demons.
Yeah. And his PC tower suffered a minor case of China syndrome. They're still trying to recover it from the Earth's mantle. Let's see, Dennis, what does Graham say?
Graham says, my Minecraft memories are a bit hazy, but back when I played a lot more, there was this mod that introduced a lot of energy-based blocks, like solar panels and strip mining devices. I once had a whole system of blocks mining countless acres of earth and converting into energy for my use. In many Terraria games, I usually make a helivator, which is a shaft you mine straight down into the earth until you hit the bottom of the game world. One time, I really spruced up my helivator by lining the shaft with fancy walls and rooms and with lots of decoration.
Oh, you never mine straight down.
Yeah, you need platforms to jump up.
The rug really ties the elevator together.
It really spruces up the hell mouth. Yeah. Yeah, no, you get into some of those mods that make Minecraft not more realistic, but more fiddly, and all of a sudden it gets a little much. Basically turns mm-hmm. Minecraft into Factorio.
Mm-hmm. You say that like it's a bad thing.
No, I'm not. I'm definitely not. I've spent a lot of time with Minecraft mods, specifically Mistcraft.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, it's not a thing anymore, but it built in world crafting and stuff, and basically brought Myst world book stuff into Minecraft.
Oh, cool. Neat.
Yeah. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says there's a mod with Morrowind, which I had new on the PC, that adds weapon racks and practice dummies in your house after you get far enough in the game to build it. Since you're tripping over weapons and armor in that game, I used it to show off over 100 weapons and armor that I picked up during many hours of playing the game. Assured to give anyone who entered a heart attack.
And Morrowind was such that I think the more items that you had in there, the longer it took for a room to load. So like,
yeah.
so I can only imagine how long it took you to enter the door of your house.
To be fair, though, I feel like this is someone that would back me up on my need to have 10 billion items in Warframe.
Not true. True. Yeah. And also, Morrowind didn't have the physics in it, so you didn't run into the problem that I ran into, which is, ooh, I've got this shelf full of potions. Oh, they're all over the floor.
Yeah.
I liked one of my favorite memories was in EverQuest, converting all of your coins to copper and just moving at a crawl and like trying to go down the stairs and dying from fall damage.
Yeah, I died in Shadowhaven like that. It was totally like, I don't know what I was doing or what I was thinking, but yeah, your fall damage was pinned to your overall equip weight or carry weight. Yeah. Jala, what does Juan say?
One says, craziest crafting item, ultimate keyblade in Kingdom Hearts 2. Weapon was great, but required looting damn near every chest in the game and some serious grinding for other components. As for structure, I made a track between my two strongholds in Minecraft on opposite sides of the map. Went through mountains and underwater with glass walls to see the sea creatures. Plenty of those red speed track things, so it didn't take long to commute.
Oh, son. You were making this when they actually had the accelerators built in, and you didn't have to use the weird little sidetracks with extra minecarts to take advantage of the way that they modified your acceleration. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, Minecraft is I think probably going to be the genesis of a lot of these.
Well, you know, for one of mine, because I had a few answers, the first time when I was playing Kingdom Hearts, the original game, and I was making my gummy ship, because there's like a little spaceship section where there's like a spaceship shooter thing between the worlds that you go to, like, mm-hmm. You can, you know, put different parts onto it, and mine, like, every single time I start making a thing, it just gets ridiculous, and so, yeah, like, my little gummy ship in that was silly.
I was always disappointed that apparently the Japanese version actually had, like, missions related to the gummy ships.
To my understanding, that's, like, in Kingdom Hearts 2 and stuff like that, that they have, like, more that you can do with the gummy ships. But okay. I may be completely wrong. I only played the first one, and anything I know about anything past that is from, like, hearsay and what I happen to remember when people say a thing, and I have, like, no reference for it, so
I
don't
feel
listen
like
to me. Somebody will probably tweet me and tell me.
I wonder how that series is going to go now that Disney is everything.
I mean, people have speculated that there's going to be a Star Wars world in Kingdom Hearts 3. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, in, what is it, 2? One of them had a Tron world in it. Like,
oh, yeah. Really?
But that was always Disney, so I don't know. Let's see. Here's a question related to that, because I'd never thought to ask it, but I've kind of wondered. Gummy ship, is it like gummy bears, but not?
G-U-M-M-I.
So
I
like,
don't know
like,
what
like
it's
a
called.
Gummy. Is it made out of gummy?
No, not that I know of. It's just a little ship thing. I don't know why they call it a gummy ship, okay?
It's made out of Minecraft blocks, basically.
Huh. Yeah, it really is kind of, it's like a very simplified looking spaceship thing. I don't know why it's called a gummy ship. It's a silly name.
I'll take a look here. I'll figure it out.
But then again, like, money is spelled M-U-N-N-Y. So, I mean, you know, you can have a gummy ship and a money.
It's the Trigun approach to, you know, spelling things.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to need to do some more research on this because I need to figure out if that ship is made out of gummy. But while I do that, David writes, smithing in the PS1 game Legend of Mana is incredibly technical. There are effects, elemental balances, levels, and potencies to take into account. The best weapons and armor can take up to 60 forging steps to complete, often with rare materials. Holy shit. I did it once, following a FAQ, as a kid. You become undeniably powerful, but I have no idea how people figured this out initially.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, and he even linked to a FAQ for anybody who wants to see what in the heck he had to do.
Let me see here. Tempering FAQ. Holy cow, let me do a print screen on this bad boy. Let's see here. How many pages is this? Yep, 31 pages of figuring out. Yeah. Wow. Huh. Well, good on you for having the patience as a kid to do that.
Right?
Yeah. Oof. Dennis, what does Patrick say?
Patrick says, I never really dig that deeply into construction and crafting systems, so it would probably be one of those rosebud mansions I used to build in The Sims. These McMansions always ended up ugly and poorly designed, but it didn't matter as long as the walls extended to the borders of the buildable area.
Oh, no!
I'm hoping that now I've met all of the assigned objectives in Stardew Valley that I can stop worrying about productivity and make the beautiful farm I've always wanted, and that it will put anything else I've ever designed in a game to shame.
Mm, no.
By making it reach the entirety of the borders of the buildable area.
Oh,
right?
Like mine does, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, you got to have an outdoor. Like, it's really depressing to play The Sims with just the indoor. Mm. Huh. Yeah, and you got to put a garden up in that, you know?
And you have to have the, you know, the trap pool. Otherwise, how are you going to, you know, drown people?
Yeah, how are you going to deal with the population? I almost called you a dummy, and I don't mean that, but it was going to be like a funny little thing. Like, how are you going to deal with all those Sims, dummy? I don't mean that.
No, I'm cool with that. I accept this.
No, I was talking to the person who wrote in. I wasn't calling you a dummy. I wasn't calling anybody a dummy. Yeah.
Don't be mean, Cole.
But I didn't. I specifically didn't. But then I kind of did. Hey, David, what does Adam say?
Adam says, building stuff in games can be a lot of fun. I enjoy building an impenetrable base in Warcraft 3 with lots of guard towers. I like the skate park I built in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3. I built a vert pool in the corner, raised it as high as I could, and built 3 entrance ramp jumps that you could name as gaps in the editor. They varied in difficulty and style, so I would name the 3 largest and most stylish of these gaps, What Would Batman Do?
Or not even that. Not
what Batman Would Do.
Yeah, what Batman Would Do. So yeah, you totally, it's like a little Venture Brothers thing. Yeah. I'm picking up what you're putting
down. It's not WWBD, it's WBWB.
Yep.
WBWD. So that 5 times fast.
Yeah. Man, good on you for not just making a skate park that was all the spike pits. Because that's all I did in Tony Hawk's level editor.
Wait, you can have... Why were spike pits even an option?
To make things a little bit interesting.
You know... I'm kind of interested as the fact that I'm not seeing anybody replying with anything from Mario Maker. I kind of figured we'd see something from Mario Maker or whatever, but
yeah, I don't know. I looking ahead, I don't see it here. Maybe other stuff overruled it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jello, what does Eric say?
Eric says, totally normal item to make, but if you can enchant 20% chameleon on 5 pieces of armor or clothing, Oblivion totally breaks in half.
Yeah. I was thinking about this when I was playing The Witcher today. Just, you know, calling back to other open world games and remembering just the number of times that I would, like, the amount of time that I would spend, like, when I was in college or something like that, just doing, like, fast travel or, like, resting near a farm and then stealing all of their corn and vegetables in order to turn into the money that I would need to sell to get the alchemy supplies that I needed to do exactly this. Like, you know, Oblivion, like the crafting in Oblivion, you're not like making one particular thing and you never really have anything to show off of the back of it. And it's nowhere near as flashy as what you can do in Morrowind, right? Like, so I'll get that out of the way right there. But like the game itself, like breaking it in half is exactly what you do. And you end up having the, you know, the joy of having done so, of saying like, oh, the rules of this world no longer apply to me because I stole enough corn.
Yeah.
Well, you are now the corn outlaw.
Corn master.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a lot of fun making spells specifically in Morrowind, but also Eric added a little bit more. I'll go ahead and read that too. Knockback on spells in Oblivion are linked to their effective range, not power. So I would make a shock spell as weak and high range as possible, drop a zillion items in a room and cast it, causing everything to rain from the ceiling.
Nice. Lindsay writes, a torture chamber for monsters on Minecraft. I think one or two monsters can live a very long time in fire. Sorry. I think monsters can live, one or two monsters can live a very long time in fire. So I'd make a box with no way out, and they would burn. I am no good at building houses or statues. My son and daughters are, though, and I like pretending that I can make something on their level. Yeah.
Look closely at the sconces. Oh, God.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I think a lot of people probably have a version of that story of just like looking up schematics of Minecraft stuff and saying like, okay, here is my big gigantic featureless tower where I just make enough dark area inside of it so monsters spawn, and then the water system will bring all of the items to the bottom level. Like, that's the thing. That's the thing. Because you need that gunpowder.
That's like, there are a bunch of weird ones in Terraria. The way they did water physics, you know, water didn't have to be a full, you know, it was the only thing in the game that didn't fill an entire block. So you could basically create these like networks of sieves that you would pour water in it to it, and would actually more water would come out because of how it calculated everything.
Right.
Oh, huh.
God, I remember troubleshooting those things trying to, like, in Minecraft, because if you didn't fill in the water in exactly the right way, it wouldn't actually take up the space. It would be a flow block, and it would really mess everything up. Yeah, so it'd be like you had a kink in the hose, and you had to go back and test everything to make sure it was the right thing. Dennis, what does Sam say?
Sam says, I worked on a giant farm / wizard tower / mine complex in Minecraft until gameplay problems compounded on themselves enough that I got bored with the game. But I assume most people who have spent any amount of time in Minecraft have done something similar. Every time I've played Skyrim? I can never, what do you mean? Anyway, every
Skyrim.
Yeah. Every time I've played Skyrim, I know it's Skyrim. I think I have a panic attack every time I see the word written and implicitly say the wrong one.
I don't understand why they didn't just camel case it so you would put the right emphasis on rim, because you're definitely not the only person I've heard say that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Every time I've played Skyrim, I always spend a ton of time organizing stuff in a house so I can pretend my fantasy man, woman, lizard is sitting around reading books and drinking in between adventures. I do a similar thing in my room in Novak in Fallout New Vegas, but less fancy.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, mm-hmm. I talked about the potion shelf. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Can only lead to heartbreak.
David, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, in Fallout 4, I built many settlements with multiple levels: trading stations on one level, dining on a second, entertainment on third, and sleeping area on fourth. Now the structure was high enough for gun emplacements. They were more functional than stylistic, but that's how I roll.
Wait, who's on third?
Boo.
The rhythm that you used when you said that kind of begged it. I'm terrible. Jallo.
See, I never found a building location I liked in Fallout 4. Like,
That game really turned me off with that particular system, because it doesn't work very well on controller. And I like playing games, I like playing games on my recliner or on my couch.
I think the thing that killed me is like, I loved the one town location is the old drive-through. And for some reason, I don't know why, like converting one of the the old style like drive-through screens that are also a building, like converting that into a house is like always been something I've thought would be really, really cool.
It's up there with like, oh, my house is a lighthouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the only source of water there is like super irradiated, and that I know, it just bothered me. I didn't like taking radiation damage every time I tried to get water.
Yeah, I need to actually go and play that because I played every other Fallout. Anyway,
I just want whoever made New Vegas to make another one.
They're busy making their own super successful games.
What they made recently?
It's Obsidian, so they did Tyranny. Tyranny is their big recent one. Jala, what does Alexander say?
Alex says, in Parasite Eve, I abused the ever-loving shit out of the gun parts system. My Frankenstein revolver, a.k.a. Big Frank, held more bullets than most semi-auto handguns, reloaded in the blink of an eye, fired as quickly as Aya could pull the trigger, could effectively one-shot God. And I want to say the bullets either exploded or lit people on fire. At some point, it stopped being about survival and became about how funny I could make Big Frank. By the end, I thought it was very funny.
It is very funny. God, that's a good crafting system.
Or lit people on fire? Why not and?
Get you a gun that can do both.
Slacker.
we're up on time, but we only have three left, so why don't we go super quick through the rest of these? Yeah. Ignacio says, the most fun I had in Fallout 4 was with the settlement building. I liked building giant floating superstructures. Sure, they were mostly empty rooms, but it tickled me to see a huge floating castle every time I walked near a settlement. A laudable goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Willem say?
Willem says, this was back in 2011, but I secretly recreated the first level of Wolfenstein 3D on me and my brother's Minecraft server, just a few layers beneath our main village. I don't recall how long this took, but I had to do it in shifts, disconnecting whenever he logged in so he wouldn't see my name floating around underneath the town and dig down to investigate. Once I was done, how do you keep someone from digging down in Minecraft? Like, that's
I think if you have a town, there might be some kind of unspoken agreement that like, hey, this isn't where our mine goes.
Don't fuck this shit. Yeah, okay. Once I was done, I connected the opening room to our village and lured him in with signs, and he got the reference straight away. My hard work vindicated. That is amazing.
Dufresne was a big fan of Wolfenstein.
And he posted a video of it as well, so that's fantastic.
Yeah, he posted a video of it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the notes, and I'm also going to watch it on mute.
Well done.
Yay!
Good on ya.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And finally here, David, what does John say?
John says, I'm not sure this counts, but I've developed unit plans for my high school art students where they play Gone Home while documenting their experiences and exploring the concept of environmental storytelling. For the final unit project, students make their own drawers of stuff that tell a story about themselves. Suppose that's more a structure I built around a game rather than in one.
No, oh, what a great idea.
That's awesome. You've enlisted a small army of environmental storytellers. That is very cool.
Like how it's a murder of crows? What is it for a group of environmental storytellers?
A disposable of environmental storytellers.
There we go.
Referring to
that's
the
really cool
precarious employment situation of people in the video game industry. No, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, that is cool.
That has the perfect element for adolescent or juvenile art projects, which is it appeals to their vanity. Hey, tell your story.
Well, here's the question. To grade it, do you allow them to present it, or does it have to be you just leave it and then the teacher peruses without context?
And figures out whose is whose.
Oh, gosh. Like a match. It's almost like a guess who kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I dig it. That is a very good idea. I don't know if it exactly matches the prompt, but I'm happy to know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not... you're all right this time, John.
complete tangent. But the one desire I really loved Gone Home. The one thing that I always sort of thought would be hilarious, though, was if you get through the whole thing and then there's the the final go up and use this go up to the attic with the very obvious keep out sign and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it would be kind of hilarious if you opened up the attic and there's the serial murderer. It's like, nope, actually is a horror game.
Oh,
and
see,
just had to get chased all through the house.
we were having this that would be terrible because I don't want bad things to happen to those people. Sure. We were having this conversation on the Hex Crank channel, that was what I was afraid of in Gone Home, was that there would be something terrible up there.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So thank you everybody for writing in. We should do ours. And because my life has been consumed recently, or my otherwise idle time when I should have been sleeping has been consumed by Stardew Valley. I'm going to say figuring out how to maximize that and also make it somewhat aesthetically pleasing has been a very worthwhile, fun thing to do. And I'm rapidly approaching the point where I'm going to buy that golden clock. However, I just saw a news story today that they're adding more single player content along with the along with the multiplayer co-op kind of side of things. So I have no idea. Also, I'm looking at this. YouTube video of the Wolfenstein thing. Very good work, Willem. It's very obvious what it is. That's good.
Yeah.
So yeah, Stardew Valley for me. Dennis, how about you?
This is going to be a deep cut, but I thought back to World of Goo.
Mm.
And the crazy, rickety, how the hell is this actually holding together structures that you had to make to just basically solve any puzzle. It was a study in how far a bridge could wobble forward before actually collapsing. but I think it was so crazy because you were improvising on the fly. And I can't think of many games that have captured that kind of improvised construction as well.
Yeah, I don't mean to swoop in and tell you how to do your job. But I thought you were going to talk about Guitar Hero 5, the tracks you made.
Oh my God. Yeah. I didn't even think about those as custom creations, but sure, that would have counted. I've probably still got those somewhere. Should pull that out sometime.
Yeah. At least record them, get them onto a tape so they don't.
That's true. Now that I've got some streaming software, some video capture software that could actually mm-hmm. carry them forward. So yeah, why not?
Yeah.
And the reason why not is because 90% of them are halfway finished. I think there's one track that I actually saw through to the end, and the rest are just hooks that I liked that never got a full song.
Well, it'd be a shame if you lost them forever. So.
Oh sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. David, how about you?
Sure. So as much as I complained about this game, I think I've actually got two instances from Fortnite. One instance was in their Fortnite mode where you're a group of four people have to survive 2 weeks of basically during the day you forage and build forts, and during the night you have to defend them from monsters. And each day or night or whatever, they basically add an additional location that you have to defend, or you have to expand one of the existing ones. And so the end result is that by the end your fort is just this massive ramshackle edifice where each, because each night you were, completely improvising on top of what you intended to build the night before. And so, for example, ours, a lot of people liked building using like all the ramp blocks to make, to basically make sort of like pyramids type structures, because it's easy to like run around them and shoot at the guys. And so we basically end up with this massive, like, wandering, like, flattened sort of pyramid maze thing. I would say the other similar instance is in your home base. It's a similar thing where you have to play the same mission multiple times, but each time it adds a new defense point.
Hmm.
And so what I did is, over the course of this, you know, each time I would build kind of the same general sort of, like, outpost, you know, sort of watchtower type thing around this defense point. But then in between times, I started building like walls connecting them with walkways and ramparts along them and stuff like that. And so it was kind of a thing where individually they were all pretty basic and just kind of crappy, but like eventually I reached this point where I'd built this sort of like castle defense system around my land. It was just, it was cool seeing how things came together kind of organically.
Hmm. So, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And does that go away when you're done, or is it?
No. So that one part is persistent. So okay. That was kind of part of it. Is there's a thing where like each time I would build a new, basically say like once every 10 levels, you'd have to build a new like little mini base in it. And in between times, I'd be building like the walls that connect them and stuff like that.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
Jala, how about you round us out?
Sure. Well, I posted some images in the Slack so you can see exactly what I'm talking about.
This
but
is ridiculous.
I would have to say I would have to say that my time in Besiege, where I made the weirdest contraptions, some of which were functional and others of which look cool, but you know, were totally impractical. I would say that would be my answer to this question. I posted this to my Twitter and Breyer said, I can just imagine you making a unicycle with multiple battering rams on top. Maximum siege, minimum engine. And it's like, yeah, because like every conceivable surface has like a flamethrower or a gun or a cannon or some spikes or something. So
nice.
I see you subscribe to the Mad Max School of Engineering.
Yeah, where's the guitarist?
Yeah, pretty much.
I like
pretty
the idea
much,
that
so.
You're like pimping out a unicycle as much as you can without adding an extra wheel, because then it's a bicycle.
Well, it just kind of reminded me, if you go to YouTube and you look it up, it'll be like just type in unicycle Superman and you find like the ukulele Batman versus the unicycling Superman with a bagpipe that shoots flames.
Yeah.
So like his comment about having like a unicycle with a bunch of battering rams and stuff just reminded me about, you know, Superman on a unicycle with a bagpipe that shoots flames. So when I
was in San Francisco, I worked for a time at a makerspace, and one of the guys that would come in, I think I've told this story, but he was a street performer where basically his thing is he had some of those like the portal style like stilt walkie things, that strap on your legs.
Yeah, like almost like a like painter's stilt kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, he had like under each foot, basically like the thing he was standing on was basically like a bellows. And then, you know, had tubes going up to his bagpipe. So he'd be like, you know, dancing around on these stilts, which is powering the bagpipe he's playing.
That sounds
like that was his routine.
I'm too annoyed by the unibagger, by the bagpiper who rides the unicycle up in Portland to really go all in on that. So I can't go on that ride with you, man. I'm sorry.
You know.
Cool. Yeah, so I don't want that to get lost. You said it kind of quick. This is Besieged on PC, is what you're made
of? This is Besieged, and I've mentioned this before because this was also my answer to, I think it was last week's question where we were talking about games that become like a time sink. Leave me alone with this thing and let me put like spikes and cannon and shit all on some kind of crazy contraption. I will sit there for hours and just sit there and jack with it until I come up with something insane. So, yeah.
Nice. Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in with this. If you want to participate in future ones, just watch our Facebook page on Tuesday afternoons. And that is at, facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. I say it every week. I don't know why I had to search for it. Oh, well.
The grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, you were not here last time, so I will throw to you first.
Sure. So I've been deep diving into Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, yeah. I remember you started that. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just completed Mission 31, which is I'm trying not to like too much spoiler. Is basically the kind of the initial, the first ending.
Well, it's at the end of like chapter one or so, right?
Right.
Like yeah. You're so 31 out of like 51 story missions or something like that.
Yeah. Although from what I can tell, I think like something like 10 of them are kind of like challenge modes, right?
Yeah, a lot of the chapter 2 missions end up being like harder or heightened versions of things you did in chapter 1.
Right, right. So actually, ironically enough, there's one of the first challenge modes after that I actually did do, and it's basically the subsistence mod. So it's they take off a bunch of the like help features, so like reflex mode where time slows down and you have a chance to kill an enemy before they spot you, things like that. Mm-hmm. And you also have like no support, nobody, and you go start the level with no items. And somehow that was the first and only mission so far that I was able to get through with the Foxhound rank, which is basically their, like, perfect stealth, perfect stealth, no one killed playthrough.
Yeah.
So apparently for me to be good at the game, all you have to do is just, like, take away every tool possible, and I suddenly somehow become competent.
Yeah, it's like if Dumbo could only fly when he didn't have the feather.
Right, exactly. So other than that, like, I generally, my approach is I have a policy that that everyone gets one tranquilizer, but only one.
I don't mean to call attention to the way you pronounce that, but I'm kind of going to. Tranquilizer sounds like a Dracula, but who only puts you to sleep when he bites you instead of turning into a vampire.
Tranquilizer.
Yeah, that's right. You're doing good.
Anyways. yes. Yeah, so but only one, and after that point, if they wake back up, they better hope they have at least an A+ rating in one stat, otherwise they're getting grenade launchered.
Oh yeah, and if they do have that, then you go balloon them. Yeah.
Yes. which never stops being entertaining. I especially like the fact that you can balloon extract like tanks that are actively trying to kill you.
Yep. Bye.
So I just unlocked the wormhole extraction.
I don't know what that is.
So basically the final upgrade for the extraction is instead of, I guess I should explain if people haven't played it. It's basically the whole like thing where you connect a weather balloon to someone, it floats up, and then a airplane or helicopter swoops by and like hooks onto it and basically drags them off into the air at very high and unexpected speeds.
It's the way you recruit new people for your mother base to help you do missions and build things up and all that. Like, all of them have different stats, and they are, let's say, onboarded by Revolver Ocelot.
Exactly. However, the wormhole version is basically just this portal appears above them, and you just kind of suck them up into the portal.
Oh, wow.
So I'm assuming that's, I can't quite tell to what degree that technology is supposed to be canon, because that's also, if you play the multiplayer mode, that's how they have you, like, get into and out of other players' bases.
Right.
So, but it's pretty ridiculous. The main difference of it is you can extract things that are indoors, and enemies can't shoot down your balloons.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, so I don't know. I'm really enjoying it overall. Although I have to say, I have no idea what Skullface's plan actually was. Like, there.
Did you finish chapter one? Like, did you get the whole monologue at the end?
Yes, there is like a 20-minute long monologue, and I have no idea what he was trying to tell me.
Yep, that sounds about right.
I don't know. I like the playthrough overall. Quiet really entertains me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the game rightfully gets shit for her depiction, but she's a very good companion to take.
Yeah, I see. I have very mixed feelings about the depiction thing, because, like, on the one hand, like, I totally understand why. On the other hand, like, the specific way it's done is very entertaining and very endearing.
I mean, if you're down for the over the topness and the, you know, the grossness
it really entertains me, the like pseudo scientific like explanations they try to give justifying it.
Yeah.
They're like, no, she totally breathes through her skin, and that's why she can't wear any clothes.
Yeah. No, we did.
Okay.
We had this conversation about the booby ladies, that and the booby lady conversation actually is one that a lot of people said that they were rather entertained by. So, like, go back to, what was it, 2015 when Ben played it, or whenever the hell it was that Ben played it, and Cole and I had that discussion.
Yeah, it was. I mean, like, Ben and I both played it roughly around the time that it it came out.
Yeah.
So yeah. So it would be like in September and October of 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, I want to say it was when Ben was talking about it and on his grind. So yeah, like, continue about the booby lady.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, overall, it struck me as being pretty much within the realm of just being good fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can understand why people would see that differently.
Yeah, different people have different sensitivities. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Well, actually, if I recall correctly, it started out where, like, Cole, you were kind of like, yeah, I don't want to, like, shame people for their thing, but it's kind of, like, nasty to have a thing like that. And I'm like, if they want a booby lady, they can have the booby
yeah.
lady. It
yeah.
is okay. Just yeah. own it.
Yeah,
have the booby lady, you know? You want one there because you want a boobies. That's fine. But just say it, you know? Don't try to sit here and cover it up like, oh, yeah. You're not trying to cover it up, so why are you trying to cover it up, you know?
Yeah.
Give it a break.
Yeah. But, like, other than that, like, that aspect of it, like, I do feel like, you know, kind of the characterization, it's just, you know, kind of an interesting, kind of entertaining character. Really, well... I say all of the buddies, by which I mean I basically use Quiet and D-Dog.
Oh, D-Dog's great too. Like,
yeah, and both of them, both in terms of, like, gameplay standpoint and just being, like, really kind of likable sidekicks mm-hmm. are really good.
Yeah.
This is, again, probably going to be a taste thing, but it really, really entertains me, the fact that all of the all of the like warning signs and stuff like that around the base are like chibi quiets and sometimes chibi what's his name, Huey's.
Yep.
so those both entertain me a great deal. I have to say, like, it seems like the story is maybe not going to go this way, but I'm really pulling for the way I want it to end is that Huey didn't betray them and that no one betrayed them. Kaz is just super, super paranoid. And like, turns out when you're a mercenary, like sometimes shitty stuff happens to you.
It's definitely not going to go that way.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't, but I still kind of feel like that in some ways would be like a more relevant ending. But
yeah. Are you going to continue going for chapter two?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm really enjoying it. I was thinking a lot. Like, I think one of the things that sort of surprised me and that I've really enjoyed, I don't know if this will at all make sense, is, you know, what I'd always heard is, you know, the game sort of characterizing as being kind of like a Japanese take on Western action movies.
In the series as a whole.
Although I would sort like I'd say like that, I think that is a very fair way to characterize it. But I would almost say one of the things that's really been a pleasant surprise to me is I would say in some ways it's almost not so much like a Japanese take on Western action movies so much as it is like if a Japanese person, you know, someone from that culture of you or whatever, like made a Western action movie, if that might make sense.
I mean, like, it's not like Kojima since the like forever has always wanted to just make movies and stuff, right? So yeah, and that's a little bit what you're getting.
Yeah and like I guess what I enjoy, or one of the things I particularly enjoy, is it's not so much you know, homage or like, you know, a parody or send up or something like that, so much as it is like a legitimate, like, you know, 80s style action movie, just, you know, because of, well, probably, you know, probably some of it the cultural stuff, some of it just Kojima being really weird, like it's just different.
Yeah.
And there's just so many things, like they're
like
the grammar the characters use sometimes is really, really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Just their whole tendency to be like, you know, oh, and then this guy, he invented sniping. You mean like he developed the modern, you know, technique of, no, he invented the sniping. It's like, you know, just like there's a bunch of like just instances where it's just, it's not so much that like the thing they're doing is just batshit insane so mm-hmm. much as it is like they're just doing it kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, I know.
Is this the only Metal Gear game you've played?
Yes, it is.
Okay. What you said initially, this is an Eastern take on Western action stuff. That's definitely really present in the first handful. By the mm-hmm. time 5 came around, they had really developed their own style and mythos. But like, you look at Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 specifically, and you see a shitload of like, oh, Kojima just really loves like Kurt Russell action movies.
Sure.
Stuff like
which,
that.
Which, I mean, don't we all?
I mean, it's Kojima likes good things. Yeah.
But
Yeah.
So really enjoy it. The gameplay overall, enjoying a lot. The little mixed on some of the multiplayer mode, but
yeah, I never really did a lot of that.
It's, you know, it's cool because it's, you know, it's you sneaking your way through someone else's mother base.
Most of them are the same. I mean, they're oil rigs.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's really just like a really solid, like Metal Gear Solid environment.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with it is just, you still have to pay your loadout fees. And then also if you get killed or, you know, incapacitated, I guess, technically, you then have to pay your loadout fees again as quote unquote ransom.
Right.
And then also like once you get killed, you get, you know, kicked back to the, your little command chopper thing and have to go in again. So there's just, there's too much psych. It's too easy to like, you know, whereas in the first game, like if you get spotted or things go bad, it's just like load up a checkpoint and try again. And there's enough cycle to kind of get good at and learn it and improve. There's just not too much time to really do that.
Yeah. So, yeah. The consequences of failure are not long term in other games or in other versions of this. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but. I do have one I did have one story question, but it's slightly eluding me.
Yeah, well, if you think of it later. Good.
Is Ocelot supposed to be Russian?
It's complicated.
Okay.
I feel like that's the answer for every question about Metal Gear.
It's complicated. He is, but he's not.
Okay, because he definitely dresses like a cowboy.
And talks like a cowboy. I mean, his voice actor is Troy Baker.
Okay. And,
yeah.
Like, isn't, like, I don't know. I feel like there's some weird characterization in that it seems like he's sometimes supposed to be a psychopath, but most of the time is kind of the voice of reason in this game.
Yeah, no. Psychopath usually goes to Kaz in this situation. Yeah, no, he's he is definitely sadistic, but only on an individual level. He is one of the more level-headed people, at least as of right now.
Okay.
At this point in the story, right?
Yeah, it does. I do have to say, ironically enough, probably the character I dislike the most is Snake.
Yeah.
Partially just because, like,
it's hard to like a character that doesn't talk.
Right, exactly. And I feel like it's a character that sort of should talk, or I don't know. I feel like there's a whole bunch of settings where it's like, I really want some character to just be like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. That's stupid.
Yeah. Well, it harms, you know, there are moments in the story where you're expected to have like, you know, pathos for Snake, and you're supposed to have, you know, like there things are supposed to land with some kind of impact, but because he is such a cipher in this, that's a funny choice of words, because he is such a blank slate in this, it ends up kind of not having the punch you would hope. And yeah, at that point,
I wonder if part of that is why, like I've said, I've spent most of the time today talking about like how much I love like all of the secondary characters.
Right.
So that may be like all of the identification that should be on the character you're actually playing kind of goes to them.
Yeah.
But
yeah. You played anything else?
A little bit of Destiny. They had a second run of their faction event. People found a really, really cheap exploit that basically allowed you to complete it in like an hour or two, which was kind of funny. But I don't know, New Monarchy won. It's pretty much just the grind.
Yeah. Are you just kind of settling into the rhythm?
Yeah, pretty much, honestly.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Cool.
I've got to do something while I'm waiting, you know, 5 hours for my next platform to build.
I think they just want you to play more Metal Gear.
Yep.
Yeah. Jella, how about you? I know you've had some big stuff.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited. So, first things first, I went back to and completed Steins Gate.
Ah, so many years later.
Which is entirely
appropriate.
The last time that I played this was in February, and I just set it down, and I just didn't play it again for a long time. And the reason, to recap, for all those people who have started listening since then or forgot or didn't listen to those episodes, this is a game that Cole really liked and was wary of recommending.
This is a visual novel that Cole really liked.
Yes, but I played it anyway because it was on my list of stuff to check out. So when you talked about it, I became interested, and so I wanted to go ahead and play it anyway. And I had some trouble with it at first because it moves, you said the way you described it was glacially.
Yep.
At first. And yeah, there's a character who is a perv and made all sorts of really gross comments and stuff. So I was not digging that because it was like the rest of the story was great. And then this one character would just like pop off or something. I'm like, dude, shut the fuck up, you know? but anyway, you had said that it would speed up and that the perv guy would chill. And those things did happen. So I eventually ended up managing to get a couple of endings, but then I couldn't figure out what I needed to do to proceed with all the other endings. And so I just kind of like set it down for a long time.
Yeah.
And so when I began to play again this time, I used a spoiler-free fact just to be sure I was on the right path and I wouldn't get mad because I like the story a lot.
So to give a little bit of insight into this, this is kind of a regular visual novel style game. You know, there's not an awful lot of play. It branches at certain points, but mostly to give you like a particular character's ending. To get the true ending, you have to engage with the system where characters will send you text messages, and you have to respond to one particular person's messages with the right thing at the right time in order to get the true ending, to get her into a situation where the, you know, everything will be right to make everything right at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So there's no shame given those circumstances that you had to turn to a guide. I definitely did. I used a flowchart. So.
Yeah. So I ended up getting the rest of the bad endings at first, and then I couldn't figure out how to get the true ending, even though I gotten all the flags up until that point. So I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to set it down and pick it up the next day. And then I did, and I was like, well, maybe if I finish Kurisu's ending again, perhaps something else would, you know, be different if I just kept rolling from there. And when I did, the second time, the true ending came up, and I was like, oh, okay, well, there you go. And I didn't realize it was that long.
It's incredibly long.
It is very, very long. And so I was just like, okay, yeah, I can see this real quick before bed. And then I was up like way late. And I was like, okay, damn it. Because I didn't want to just like, I was at the good part. I'm like, okay, this is the ending. Okay, the ending. You know, but anyway, it was a good way to finish out the story.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, I really loved the game. I cried at several points in the story, and I became attached to most of the characters except for Moeka and Naya, who are both creepy, and including ones that I didn't think I'd like, Mayuri and Daru and Faris. I just did not think I would like any of them, but actually they became tolerable, and then they became, like, okay. I mean, I can't say I love them, but they're all right.
Yeah.
I really want to play Steins Gate Zero, but by the same token, I know that too much at one time is going to burn me out, and I don't want that to happen, so I'll play something else for a while before I loop back around and continue with the next game. I'm hoping that when I get back to Persona 4 Golden, I have a similar response, but I don't think I'm quite ready to return to that yet because I also finished dun 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 Final Fantasy Tactics War of the Lions. I finished it.
Wow, it took me
6 months. I seriously, I think I started playing this game in like June, maybe. 6 months, almost 6 months of playing. Maybe it was a little earlier than that, I don't remember. But anyway, yeah, It's a shame that the story picked up pace when I was already burned out. I tried taking breaks from playing this game, and that is why it took me that long. It was like 5 months to beat it. But the thing is that I never got excited to get back into it like I did with Steins Gate, where I was like, I really want to go back and finish that game. I never felt that way about this game. Breaks just meant that it was harder for me to get back into it because, you know, like, and that's not like a function of, oh, this game sucks. It's more a function of it's a JRPG. And like, whenever I set a JRPG down, I don't really feel like an exciting urge to go back to it. Like,
right.
It's the type of game and my response to it. It is not a fault of the game itself. But anyway, near the end of the game, it seems like almost all of Chapter 4, the battles are super imbalanced to where they essentially boil down to who has better equipment and can biff the other guy for the one hit kill.
Mm-hmm.
And ending the game that OP, for me at least, made me feel like I didn't have much of a sense of accomplishment. And the gameplay was significantly less satisfying. Like, I remember talking about in the beginning when I was fighting and I was like, man, and then I had this one little black mage guy left. And if anything hit him, he was going to die. And then I managed to kill him right before the other, you know, like, that was exciting to me. Whereas this is just like, okay, who has better equipment? Who goes first? They win. You know, I'm like, okay, well, you know, it's not so great to me. The battle against the first Orsite Fiend guy was really tough, and I had to redo that several times, but I was excited because it was a challenge, right? And it kept me playing it in the same sitting until I got it. And there were other battles like that, you know, like I said, with the mage battle, you know, that battle when the one little black mage guy was the only guy left and things like that. It just made me excited to play those particular battles. Yeah. But in the end game, I beat a few fights before any of the enemies had a chance to move. And, yep, like, that's lame. That is lame. I'm sorry. That's lame.
No.
There are people who really like that kind of, like, yeah, now I'm so overpowered, I can totally beat ass. Well,
no.
It's not
freezing.
Me.
Beat
ass. I get bored. So, the thing is, you also lose a sense of discovery after a while because you try all the classes, as, you know, as best you can anyway, and then you get all excited about unlocking the new skills to see what they do. But after you've seen enough of them, you're treading water. You're trying to catch up one character to another character that already has that ability or something. And so, you know, like, that kind of gets less exciting after a while, where I'm like, oh, a new class. It's kind of late in the game. I don't feel like grinding this character.
Yeah.
And they're not going to, you know, compared to these other guys that I know what they can do, this character is not going to get anywhere anytime soon. They're just going to fall out of use or just stay the class that they were. Eh.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not really all that exciting, unfortunately. I was talking to Michael Pren about grinding, and I figured out what my deal is. I'm so excited that I know what my problem is with it.
I want to hear this. I like self-discovery.
Yes, I was very excited. He said, if there's a cool enough carrot to chase, I'm down with it. And it reminded me of what Ben was saying about RTS games on episode 219, like last episode. On that episode, I said that in open world games, when I wander off and I give myself some task to do, you know, the battles that I come across don't feel like grinding either. So essentially, the difference between grinding, which is bad, and just playing the game to unlock or finish content, which is okay, to me is just the... really just like the interest level that I've got. Thing is, I'm not interested in ticking off another level on my dudes, you know, or like in Final Fantasy Tactics, grinding battle after battle to baby a character until they unlock a skill that I want them to have.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's like two or three battles to unlock them. If it's two or three battles, then I might do it, but like, not if it's like, okay, I have to have how many job points for this?
You
fuck
want it.
It
when?
So, like, in this game, on the initial playthrough, I wanted a through line to the main story. None of the side story crap or hunting down extra characters or going out of my way to unlock stuff. No, I just wanted to see the main ideas that the game presents and how the battles go and just see that content on the initial stuff. So on a subsequent playthrough, I wouldn't have the strong interest to see the main story to completion because I would have already done that. So all the side quests and unlockables would be more interesting on the second time through, and it would take less time overall because I know how to play, so I wouldn't put all my points into random skills. I would know which skills I like better, and then I would start playing other classes and stuff. So, like, really, this game for me is engineered really more towards a second playthrough than it is, you know, an initial playthrough. Like, my interest level on this first playthrough went in and out. There were times where I was excited about it, and then there were times where I just totally wanted to throw something, you know. And I don't think I would suffer that same problem if I went, you know, if I was going on a replay.
Right.
So, but yeah. So I was so mad at the ending.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, that's a better feeling than feeling nothing, because that means that it elicited a response, which means the story eventually grew on me, even though I was like lukewarm on it for like 2/3 of the game.
I don't want to be the guy who says, well, actually, like, they tell you what's going to happen at the very beginning. Like, this is presented at, like, the framing devices, like, everything that you're seeing is a historical footnote that nobody knows, because nobody ever wanted anything to get out about it.
Oh, I know. But you also have to remember that when I started this game was 5 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Number one, I've slept since then. Number two, I've had a lot of shit going on in my life.
Right.
I am not thinking about that intro. But of course, like, when I finished the game, yeah, I remember the intro, but that's not the point. Even if you know that it's coming, when you actually see it presented to you, that's a very different thing. And then you're just like, bitch! You know, I just get
confused. Yeah. So, there's no justice in Evil East. Yeah.
Yeah, so I had a bunch of questions, and Vivian and David Petroco and Kyle and Maurice all helped answer them as best they could.
Yeah, they'll be far better guides to that than I would.
Yeah, so, like, I had so many questions in it. Like, you know, people could see on my Twitter and my Facebook where I was talking about that. But, yeah, I was very upset about Oran. I was very upset because Delita is a shit.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I've hated Delita since the beginning, so that's not exciting or anything. Like, I never liked him. But although there is, or at least was, apparently a lot of talk about whether or not Ramza and the rest actually died, apparently Matsuno had confirmed on Twitter a while back that they are canonically not dead. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then there are a bunch of questions that leave the ending looking like a heap of nonsense, which is so shitty. Like, he should have just, they shouldn't have put the scene where it's like, you know, they have the animation showing, you know, Ramza and Alma wandering off, and they shouldn't have done that. And they shouldn't have said on Twitter that it is canonically not dead, because if their appearance in the graveyard was just like a figment of Oran's imagination, that would have made Oran 100 million times even, you know, more interesting to me overall. Like, I want a game about Oran. You know, like, I don't even care about these other people. But anyway, like, how could they have even gotten out of the Necro Hall when you needed a gate, which the dude destroyed? And where did the Orcsite even fucking go? And the other party members, like Mustidio and Egrius, you know? And apparently the Orcsite shows up in 12, but how, if it was in the Necro Hall lost forever? Like, it's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Nonsense. Yeah. I was so mad. I was like flipping tables all over the place.
I don't remember enough of the details about the ending, about that last chapter to be able to address any of this for you.
No, like, this is just me kind of like spewing rhetoric, although I'm much calmer now. Like, man, I'm so mad. Yeah. So mad. But yeah, so the thing is, here's the kicker. On the whole, I still think that I end up on the side of liking this game, partially because I know that if I go back and ever play it again, it will be a smoother and more enjoyable experience than this first one, because the game has a sharp learning curve. It's really slow to start. It has a lot of fiddly bits for you to play with and learn about and fine tune and all that crap.
Fiddly bits.
Yeah, I know. That's a word I use multiple times. I've said that many times.
No, I know. I was laughing because it's a thing.
Ongoing thing. Yeah. So, but yeah, like I said, all of these things become easier on a subsequent playthrough. And then the little story tidbits will probably be more interesting and engaging upon a second playthrough than they are right now. Cause like the first two thirds of the game, I don't really care. I started to kind of care at the end of the game. So going back and playing the beginning of the game again would be a different experience, you know? So whichever. But yeah, like the ending third of the game where the story picks up is unfortunately also where you become so OP that the game is just, you know, that one shot thing. And I don't feel challenged enough, so it's not interesting to me. So that next playthrough, I know that eventually I will play this game again, but it's going to be a long time from now.
Right. It's like with Steins;Gate, you got to give yourself some cool down time. That's why I was kind of curious when you said that you were going to go and play Persona, because like I would think this would wear down that tactics would wear down the tolerance for what Persona would put you through.
And that is precisely the reason why I want to give myself a little bit more time before I go and play Persona. I do want to continue Persona because there were some, mechanics in that game that were interesting to me. It's just the grinding that is going to make me flip a table, and I need to take a break from it for a while before I go back to it. So, I will play other games. I've got other games I'm in the middle of. You know, I'm in the middle of Inverbis Virtus, Resident Evil 7, Mages of Mistralia, which I never actually talked about on this show, but you can go back and listen to Dark Insight sometime in the summer. I was on that show, and I was talking about it there. And several other games. Like, I never finished Shovel Knight. I still have Shovel Knight to play. But the problem is that Shovel Knight, I would totally play it if it was on my Vita, but it's not on my Vita. It's on Steam. And so, like, I would have finished it by now if it was on my Vita.
True that, yeah.
Yeah. Like, damn it, everything needs to be portable.
I'm happy you ended up not regretting all of the time that you spent with Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, here's the thing. Like, Steins Gate is a good example of it, where there are times where something will hit me wrong when I'm first playing it, and I'm super skeptical, and I'm just like, I am not gripped by anything that I am seeing right now. And I continue playing it, and as I play it, you know, things happen, and then it ends up opening up and becoming better for me, like a better experience overall for me. And I knew that was going to happen with Tactics, and that is why I kept on playing it, even though I had to set it down, I had to take a long time, whatever. Like, I knew that was going to be the end result. Steins Gate, I had a feeling it was going to be the end result. Not everything is Danganronpa, although I have to say, Cole, when I was going through all of my memory cards on my Vita the other day, I found, to my surprise and chagrin, and I don't know what other, you know, words we can use for this, that without my recalling ever having purchased it, Danganronpa 2 is on one of my memory cards. So...
Yeah, I saw you post about that. Jala, as a favor to me, don't do that to yourself. Go ahead.
The only reason that, like, the time that I crack that open and start playing it, it will be for the listeners, because so many of them are just like avidly waiting for me to flip a table about something.
Right. You don't have to. If people clapped every time you hurt yourself, you don't have to hurt yourself just for their. No. You can be your own person.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. Like, remember when I was playing the original game, although I got mad at it, especially at the end of it, like, for a large portion of it, I was just like laughing about it, and I was still playing it because there were elements about it that I liked enough to keep playing it. The ending is really what made me mad in that game more than anything else. Like, the tropes were irritating, and the method by which the game plays out is fine, you know, and there were parts of it that I really enjoyed. It was the ending that made me just totally flip a table and get like rage worthy. I was so pissed at the ending. Yeah. So that was kind of me after Final Fantasy Tactics, but then I settled down and I asked questions and people answered. It was fine.
Yeah. The things that you... Go ahead.
there was no redeeming the end of Danganronpa. That was stupid cop out. It made me so mad.
And I don't know if you had run into the same thing. Like the ending of Danganronpa 2 is definitely, I think Dennis can back me up on this, but it's definitely remarkable. But I don't know if it would trigger the same kind of instinct for you. And I need to speak about it in vague terms because I really enjoy it, and I don't want to like take that wind out of anybody's sails. You know?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, Danganronpa was not. The one that made me actually want to throw my Vita was VLR.
Okay.
That one made me want to throw my Vita across the room. Danganronpa, I got mad at it, and I turned it off, and I'm like, that was so fucking stupid. I'm so mad. But, like, that's just because it copped out into a lot of stereotypical nonsense that I had already seen a million times. It had potential to do a lot more than it ended up doing. And I think I even said that at the time as one of my critiques of the game is just it has way more potential than what the actual manifestation is. And that's the thing that just irks me about that game.
Yeah. And like Danganronpa 2, I think, has the potential to be the something more. But in order to get there, like, it takes a lot of the stuff about DR1 and just, like, turns the volume knob until it breaks it. Dennis, am I wrong about that? Like,
no, I think you're right on that. And I also think, though, that the ending to Danganronpa 2 is a little bit more definitive.
Yeah.
And for me, at least, it was satisfying. Like, I didn't have as many unanswered questions at the end of 2 as I did at the end of 1. Now, I still had plenty of unanswered questions, but...
Right.
It's not even about the unanswered questions at the end of 1. The thing that made me so mad was like this whole like shonen power of love bullshit that they pull at the end of that is totally discordant with the rest of the game, and it made me so mad. I was just like, this is bullshit. Yeah. Made me mad. So that's the thing that pissed me off more than anything. It just fell into tropes so often that like I was hoping that maybe they would use the tropes and then turn them on their head. I was kind of, and that's the thing, I was expecting it to do that sometime and then just like give me something completely awesome at the end that was different than what I was, what would be par for the course. And unfortunately, what I ended up with was some power friendship bullshit like from a shonen anime series, and I'm just like
I could tell you what they do with that, but that would involve going into way too much detail, and I don't want Ben's head to explode on his birthday without knowing why.
right. No, so what I'm trying to explain with that is that I would not be adverse to playing Danganronpa 2 and seeing what happens with it, even though, like, it's kind of like I finished through VLR, and then even at the end of VLR, even though I wanted to throw my Vita, I'm like, I still kind of want to see what the hell happens in the story. I'm not as interested in the story in Danganronpa. However, the gameplay is more interesting. I had a gripe about the way the gameplay worked in VLR, and that was the largest portion of my anger with that game.
Yeah.
Was the mechanics of it. In Danganronpa, I like the mechanics. I don't really care about the story either way. I'm more interested in the story in the Zero Escape series.
Yeah.
And I have no fucking clue what's happening in that series, like, at all. But that is okay. Whatever. So I will probably eventually play that. It's not going to be right away. So the people avidly waiting for me to flip a table on you again will have to wait a little while.
Understand, you wouldn't be flipping a table on me because I told you not to play it.
Yeah. You have to play it because you remember the last time. So yeah, for sure. But I did want to definitely bring it around and make it a point to say, see these things that I had complaints about and I stubbornly kept playing anyway. I wasn't playing them just so I could complain. Like, there legitimately were reasons why I was playing them, and just because the game hits me wrong at first doesn't necessarily mean it's kind of like Resident Evil 7, maybe one of those cases where as I play more of it, I get into it and I'm like, okay, that first part was rough, but now I'm kind of cool. So,
might be the case.
Like, exactly. So, that's all I got to say about
that. Cool. We should probably move. Dennis, I want to hear what you've been playing.
Yeah, I'll help get us back on track because I don't have anything huge new to report, but I've hit milestones in a bunch of games that I've been playing, so I can run through those real quick. It struck me as Jala was talking about the idea of like, okay, who moves first and you know, who has better equipment, they win. I've hit a similar part or a similar point in XCOM 2, but I think to very different effect. Like I've finally gotten my soldiers, or at least some of my soldiers, leveled up enough that they can kind of be those gods on the battlefield, that they can get the drop on people and do some pretty incredible things. But that's always with the caveat that there's that, you know, 25% chance that they miss and just get killed if I put them in too vulnerable of a position. So it's like, yeah, my guy's a god who can jump to any point in the map and take 6 shots at enemies from a flanking position. But if each of those shots has a 10% miss chance, suddenly it starts getting really scary, because, you know, if even one guy survives and is able to put a solid hit on the guy, I've just downed one of my best soldiers for hubris, right? But that said, I'm the major milestone that I've hit is I have defeated all 3 Chosen, which are like the major additions to this expansion pack, the enemy super soldiers that kind of hunt you throughout all your missions. So it felt like a major accomplishment. It was kind of fun to compare and contrast my mission taking down the first, where it was like unknown territory. I had no idea what I was doing. I was barely scraping by and craziness like that, with the last one where I had a team of killing machines who had been down this road before and kind of was taking the fight to them. So that felt really, really good. There is also, you know, now that I'm probably 40 hours in, let me check real quick. it's going to be an insane number.
While you're 60. Doing that. Oh, 60, 60. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, 60. I would say 100 million.
Yeah. Probably on the game in total. Yes. But for this specific playthrough, which is an Iron Man playthrough, or no, I guess it's more like 50. So I'm 50 hours in on this Iron Man playthrough.
You just negotiate it with yourself.
Yeah.
40, 60, 50. All right, deal.
What am I willing to admit versus rationalize away? But there is a unique sense of dread and adrenaline when you jump into a mission on Iron Man when you've put 50 hours into the campaign.
Right, because all of that could go down the toilet.
Yeah, even if you've done everything right up to that point, one stupid decision can just set you so far back.
Just one bad break. Like, it doesn't have to be all on you either.
Yeah, like it could be a 2% miss chance that doesn't hit, you know? So that is a unique experience. It's a very exciting experience that you can only get after kind of investing this amount of time into the game. That said, I've talked previously about how some of the other mechanics that were added with War of the Chosen encourage you to kind of build a more well-rounded squad of soldiers versus just having your like 6 super soldiers that you rely on for everything. So I think even if I did completely squad wipe at this point, I would probably be able to come back. So I'm feeling like I've reached that tipping point, which is good.
So they encourage you to set goals for your squad.
Yeah, yeah, I would say that's accurate.
Okay.
So the other game that I reached a major milestone in was Destiny 2, where I finally completed the raid for the first time.
Oh yeah, I saw you put out a call for folks last night, was it?
It's tough to get 6 people together for, you know, 2.5 hours or however long.
Yeah.
But my God, is it rewarding. Like, and again, I've talked about before, this is my only experience with raiding, but it was awesome. So it was me and Video Dragon and Argyle from the Slack, but Argyle's in a different clan and there was all this other stuff. So we needed to find 3 random people. We wound up using, it's a service called The 100. I think it's a site to find people. And then Destiny 2 actually has a companion app that has a pretty robust, like, find people to play with thing to it. So it's not quite automatic online matchmaking, and I'm okay with that. Like, you know, it took a bit of effort to find people to play with versus just hitting a button and waiting for people to queue in. But that guaranteed the people that you're playing with really want to be there, because they had to invest some effort to find us as well. And I think that meant that we got high quality people who were using their mics and were committed for the whole time. And for at least a couple of them, just like me, it was their first time completing the raid. And I have people, you know, again, these just randos that I found being like, hey, if you're ever on again, we're friends now. Just, you know, send me an invite. We'll play. So it was a real bonding experience.
Hmm.
So I'm very proud of that. It was a lot of fun. I captured video of the final boss fight.
Oh, cool.
The Kallus fight, and put that on YouTube. So if anyone wants to see us stumble through that final fight, you can.
Awesome.
But yeah, so that was awesome. I mentioned last week very briefly that I was playing Super Mario Galaxy 2 on the Wii to see if the kiddos were at all interested in being star catchers. They were not, but they are interested in watching. So we've continued playing Super Mario Galaxy 2. That's been a lot of fun. Although it definitely is one of those things where just 3D platformers show their age rather quickly, I think. Oh. And I would be very interested to try Super Mario Odyssey after playing this, just to see if they've smoothed out the controls is a very vague way of saying it. I think it's, you know, operating in 3D space, and then with Super Mario Galaxy, where you're operating oftentimes on very small planetoids where the gravity is changing, you know, it makes it feel more imprecise than I would like. At the same time, though, I think they design the levels knowing that you're kind of working around a certain amount of impreciseness.
Yeah.
And it, you know, so that it doesn't hamper you. It's just you kind of have to, you're guiding Mario in a direction versus specifically controlling him. It feels like a lot of the time. I don't know how that jives with Odyssey.
Yeah. There's a little bit more precision in Odyssey, and I think that's a result of you controlling the camera directly. And also not doing as much with, like, there's, I haven't run into like planetoid stuff. There could be an entire kingdom that is like that, but yeah. And I think that might be exacerbated in Galaxy 2, because Galaxy 2 is like the hard mode of Galaxy 1. They don't really fuck around that much by like extending you a lot of grace into.
Yeah, they definitely lean into the challenge. That said, it's still an incredibly fun game with lots of charm. And yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Cool.
Let's see. I think that's basically it. I started playing Aether 1. It's like a walking simulator / puzzle game, but I haven't really gotten far enough to comment on it yet.
Yeah, that looks really interesting. It's like you're inside somebody's mind trying to solve their problems.
I think the one thought it's given me is I really appreciate games like Machinarium or The Witness, where they still have some of that, you know, in the case of The Witness, walking simulator elements to them, but the puzzles are very defined and explicit. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Aether 1, at least to this point, they're, you know, the puzzles get no more complicated than like find the right number to put on this combination.
Right.
It's a lot of environmental storytelling. And kind of figuring out the right way forward. But that means that I spent probably, you know, 10 minutes more than I should have in a room trying to figure out like the trick or the secret, when really it was, nope, you've seen everything, walk out of the room.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, I felt like I wasted time. Whereas I don't think I've ever felt like I've wasted time in The Witness, because I'm always working against something concrete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, this is already a pretty long episode, and I want to put it to you guys. I only have one thing to talk about. It's pretty late. Do you want me to like skip it and talk about it next week, or are you cool like having another 10 minutes put on?
No, no, I want to hear from you.
Talk.
David?
Sure.
Okay. I have one game that I've been playing, and I've been streaming it as well, so you can watch that and hear reactions to individual things that go on, but I think I mentioned I was going to talk about this week. I've been playing for Hexcrank Live a game called Lisa the Painful.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa : the Painful. The Painful is the subtitle for this. This is a side-scrolling RPG that is one of the most singularly unpleasant games that I've played in a very long time. but it's also ridiculously funny, but there are a number of caveats kind of put on top of that. So this is an indie game. I think it came out in like 2015. It's like the kickstarted bigger sequel to another game called Lisa the First. You're playing as this guy, this martial arts master named Brad. It's after the world has ended in this cataclysm that not only killed most of the population, but wiped out all of the women. And Brad, who comes from his own kind of, you know, really kind of fucked up background, ends up finding this infant child, this infant girl, and starts raising her as, you know, his own daughter, you know, with his group of friends, recognizing that she may be the last hope for mankind, you know, for all of life. Well, meanwhile, in the, you know, 10 or 15 years that the entire game, you know, that the intro takes place over, everything has gone to shit, Mad Max style, with horrible gangs and terrible degradation and things. Now, this is not a game I'd recommend anybody play if they have problems with depictions of things like domestic violence or child abuse or drug abuse or let's say sexual degradation or kind of weird subversions of gender roles, because it's pretty upfront and frank about what the consequences of a male-only society would be, and it plays them, you know, to a certain degree for laughs. Like, there are just like laugh out loud moments where, like, I had no idea what to do with myself. But like, the reason this is on Hexcrank, and this was demanded or requested last year during Duck Stream by a donor, somebody in our community goes by the name of E, you know, saying like, yeah, this is, you know, this may be like way too depressing, if you want to skip it you can. Discomfort is a huge part of horror, and I think that this does an amazing job, especially at the psychological aspect of this, because your main character is addicted to this drug called joy, that has kind of caused him to have these hallucinations and things, and kind of have his own troubled past follow him around. And also, like, there are things the story forces you to do that are very obviously the results of your main character's mind pushing him toward this particular kind of behavior because of this particular kind of dependence that he has. From the play perspective, like this, like I said, this is an RPG. You know, you're playing it from a side, like a side perspective. So you're doing a little bit of like navigation, not so much jumping, but you got a bike that'll let you jump over like one block gaps and things like that. All the fights take place. It's, you know, this entire game has like a real homage to Earthbound kind of feel to it, or the Mother series. And, you know, they take place from, you know, a first person perspective, and your party's made up of all these little people that you've either paid or recruited or forced into your service to fight for you. It's a really interesting JRPG or turn-based RPG in that sense. It's not really Japanese, but turn-based, because most of the fights that you do are boss fights. Almost all of them are really consequential in that they're very difficult. And as you go on, certain enemies have moves that will perma kill your party members. And you just have to like bring somebody new in, and they offset that by just having a shitload of party members that you can recruit, all of which play substantially differently.
Do you have to like build them up at all?
Not really. There's not really like a real sense of, oh no, I have to bring somebody up from like level 5. There may be some like passive experience gain that you get on the back of, you know, like as your main character levels up, so everybody else does. But yeah, you end up kind of churning through characters, and the game, you know, at multiple points will say, all right, do you want to lose this party member? I will kill this party member, or I will cut off one of your arms. Which, because your main character has this kind of, he's a martial artist, he has this combo-based kind of thing, well, you lose the ability to do combos that require that arm. You know, so your vocabulary goes down the toilet as you make these choices, to the point where, like, if you lose both of your arms, you end up only being able to do bite attacks. Stuff like that. like I said,
but you're surrounded by people who are really appreciative of you.
True, yeah. So If you watch the stream, there are multiple points where I lose my shit laughing at this because it has amazing timing. It's a couple years old, so I don't mind spoiling too much. But there's one particular moment where you walk in and you find this guy who's kind of taking care of these kids. Like, you got all these kids on the screen, and first off, you have a couple of dialogue options. He's like, "Hey, what are you here for?" One of your answers could be, "Oh, I'm looking for a kid." Like, "Oh, I'm looking for my daughter," but like, "Oh, I'm looking for a kid." He freaks out and says, like, "Oh, well, I'm going to fight you because you're here coming after it." If you say, "Oh, nothing," he tells you, "Oh, I'm running an orphanage. I'm really taking care of these kids." As he's talking to you, these little kids, they start playing with matches. And one of them lights the grass on fire. And as you approach this whole situation, you see this little, you see something on the ground. You examine it, thinking it's an item you can pick up. It says, "Oh, this is a bucket." And like, "Oh my gosh, we got to put that out. Hey, grab that bucket." Put it out. So you run and grab the bucket that you could grab onto. And, the second that you examine it, you fling what's in the bucket on the kids. Turns out it's gasoline and they all burn to a crisp.
Oh, no!
Whoa.
It's like, "Wait a minute, what the fuck were you doing? I was putting that bucket up there." Like, there's a huge bucket.
Oh my gosh.
Like, "Oh no." And it turns out, yeah, you by even interacting with this guy, you doomed all of these kids to a terrible death. So it's pretty dark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think I'm gonna finish it up this coming weekend is my hope. Finish it up before Thanksgiving. I'm happy to.
Yeah, it sounds like it might not be the greatest Thanksgiving game ever. just around the family.
The greatest thing to carry forward into the holiday times. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's very neat. It started, streaming this has started other people to playing it, or at least talking about it, or weighing the merits of like, hey, all this horrible stuff, is it worth depicting it in a game? Does this treat it with too much lightness, or what can I do? Is this way too much for you or me personally? Again, a certain measure of a game is how long does it stick with you after you play it. It's probably going to stick with me for a little bit at the very least, and so I think it's pretty noteworthy, at least for that, let's say. Mm-hmm. any questions or comments about that which I have described?
Say, knowing that you don't know the ending yet, do you have any sense for how this game is going to wrap things up? Like, are you worried it's going to try to like put a pretty bow and make everything better at the end, or do you trust it to kind of stay dark?
I have absolutely no hope or inkling that they will try to redeem any person involved in the story, based on what I have seen so far. And I don't think they're going to try and happily ever after this.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Jolly,
you tuned in and watched a little bit of this. Do you have anything to say?
Nope. I was just tuning in and watching and, listening to you busting your ass laughing about whatever happened to be funny at the time.
Whatever terrible thing happened.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's all. I'd like to say that I played more Super Mario Odyssey, but my life has been consumed by The Witcher 3 when I have not been streaming. And I'm going to talk about that on WAF. So,
yep. Womp.
Yeah. Well, do
not
you all
womp, WAF?
Do you want to button it up?
Buttons.
Sure. The credit.
Thank you so much, toggles. Everybody. What was that, David?
Toggles.
No, don't.
No.
Thank you everybody for listening to level number 220. We really appreciate it. Like I said at the beginning, not going to be doing a show next week because I'm going to be out of town, and gosh, Thanksgiving is right upon us. But you can listen to Jala on the Dark Insight podcast. Do you have any anything you're gonna take to that? Is there any order of business that people can they can tease people with?
No, because I don't know what I'm going to be playing for that yet. We'll see. I'll make it something special that I'm not going to be talking about on the level, so you'll only be able to hear it there.
Cool. But the usual stuff here. If you want to leave us a rating or review, I'd really appreciate it. That can be done on iTunes or Google Play, any of those places where you get your podcast. That helps raise the profile of the show. Otherwise, have a safe holiday if you're going to be traveling, and please join us next week and maybe bring a friend.
If you can't have a safe holiday, have an exciting holiday.
Also, happy birthday, Cole.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Really? Yeah. Next week. My birthday is on Monday. I'm going to be turning 30 years old.
30.
Yep. 30. Yep.
And Ben is turning 60 today.
Doesn't look a day older. Anyway, thank you so much. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me at Duckfeed TV on Twitch.
Yeah, I've been Dennis Furia. I'm at GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
I'm David Mysmith, and you cannot find me, for I am a ninja.
I like that. I'm Jolichon in places.
Yep, and stick around for some titles.
Title. Who's got the title?
Yeah. Who has titles?
I have Jala. A few. Yeah. Who vigils the Lantees?
I had that. I also had Who Laws the Outlaws?
Okay. I also have The Rug Really Ties the Hellmouth Together.
Okay.
I also have That Ship Is Made Out of Gummy. And then Negotiate with Yourself.
That's also pretty good.
Yeah, I like that.
So I also had James Whiteson. Fantasy Man Woman Lizard. And
that was for Sam.
Leave Me Alone and Let Me Add Spikes.
Okay. Dennis?
So I had Who Vigils the Lantees. I had WBWD.
Okay.
And What Batman Would Do. And then I had The Corn Outlaw.
Okay. I just had Corn Master for that. anything else?
No, those are the ones.
Okay. I had Corn Master and I had Goals for Your Squad. I mean, by votes, we had three for Who Vigils the Lantees. Should I put an apostrophe in front of Lantees?
Yeah, I think so.
I know not of such grammatical things.
Jolly, you sounded uncertain.
No, that was like a. I don't really care. It's fine.
Okay.
Whatever.
All right. Okay. Who vigils the Lantees it is.
Kay.
Sweet.
All right. Well,
fair enough.
I'm going to go.
Hey, have a happy Thanksgiving, y'all.
Yes. Same to you.
Yeah,
same to everybody.
Crap. It's going to be a while.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Take care.
Be happy and safe and things.
Yes, you too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Night.
Peace.